Hey guys, and welcome back to the Rocket Jump Film School Office Hours podcast. And today we're talking to Kevin Zinzaki, who you guys know from some of our sound tutorials and has done all the sound, basically, for Rocket Jump in the past several years. And we're going to talk to him about some recent trends in sound design and some movies you can start watching if you're interested in sound design. So, hope you guys enjoy.
Rocket Jump Film School, scene one, Apple.
And welcome to the Rocket Jump Film School podcast Office Hours. And we have Joey, Kevin, myself, and Cherish here. And we're going to be talking about our favorite movies to watch for sound design. Thanks, Joey. Why don't you start us off?
We did a little Singing in the Rain thing there. I think Singing in the Rain is like a good like way to start off. That was like when I saw a movie when I was a kid was Singing in the Rain, and because that was in, pictures were not just silent films anymore.
It's sort of a movie about
talkies.
That.
A movie's about talkies. Yeah. So
that's great. It's about the transition from just silent film to sound films.
Yeah. That was a weirdly appropriate intro.
That was really good.
Yeah, it kind of worked.
Good job.
Because look, you know how it is. Okay, anyway. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, Joey?
Kevin's the professional here.
Well, you know, that's just a title. That's just a paycheck.
Well, you were talking earlier, this was really interesting, about how we can talk a little bit about the history of sound and sound design and how that came up, but also we're saying if we want to be more in touch of what's the new technology and what's happening now, we should probably just focus on movies in the last 20 years.
Right. Like, I think on the whole, like any part of film, because it's a technology and, the creativity is expressed through that technology, you see a lot of trends. And it's like at a certain point, there'll be an innovation. And the first movie that does this innovation does it really simply, because it's usually the story demands like a new innovation. And then you see mutations on the idea, and then you see it, that version sort of saturate the market. So I think to make that relevant in any way, I think in general, when you're watching movies and you want to, if you really want to get into sound design, you want to know what's going on in the industry and, you know, what to really, study, I would honestly just suggest movies made in the last 15 years because there've been so many changes, in the 80s and the 90s, watching older films are great for, just to see what they did creatively. But in terms of where movies are really, I would say it's important to watch a lot of current films, you know, as much as, people like to say, oh, you got to watch all these classics. You know, in a way, to really study the craft, you should see where it is right now, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's an example of one of those innovations that started a trend?
Right. Well, there was a movie in the 50s, and I'm only going to talk about this briefly, called Forbidden Planet. It has Leslie Nielsen in it. It's fantastic.
It's Robbie the Robot, or one of the variations.
But anyway, I'm sure very few people watching this have seen this movie, but the point is they were like the first film to have like goofy, like sounds in a sci-fi film. They set that trend. And then in the late 70s, Star Wars came out, and Ben Burtt and George Lucas had the idea of, we don't want it to sound like that. We want it to sound more lived in and real. So for Star Wars, their big innovation was using a lot of real-world sounds. You know, like the lightsaber is famously a film projector plus the hum of a television. And that just gives you a steady... It doesn't sound like that at all. You've seen Star Wars, right? And then the way
was a blaster.
Yeah, and then the way they got the
so wrong.
Saber to
I've
move
seen
on
the movie. Sorry. Hello.
Can we talk about Star Wars? Is that old?
We're talking about Star Wars. Yeah,
just, or we can make the noises.
What's so great about Star Wars? Is that we can at least try and imitate those sounds. Like as a kid, you were always doing the sounds.
I think that proves how effective it was.
Exactly.
Because the lightsabers are made out of real world sounds. They're not synthesized sounds, as it were.
Yeah.
And then, like, the laser blasts, it's a microphone placed on the, like, 45-degree angle, like, cable that comes down from telephone poles. I don't know what you call that.
It's like the support. Yeah.
But it's basically just like a piece of metal, and if you strike the metal, vibrations will go through it, and the higher pitches go through first, blah, 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 but you get that. If
that's
you have
really
a microphone actually on the cable. The TIE fighter is an elephant and a car on a wet street, I believe, which gives it that sound. But it's all real sounds.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a big deal.
Yeah.
watching behind the scenes on the sound design for Star Wars and just any of Ben Burtt's stuff is
extremely educational.
Extremely fascinating, yeah, because it is like just reappropriating like the way. Did he do Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, because like when he's talking about how, what's the sound of the Ark, you know, opening up, and it's just him
describing. It's a toilet lid, right?
The toilet lid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's the sound of the Ark lid getting taken off. It's just the tank.
So much of that
the
is online, tank. Too. You
it's
can,
really
like,
cool
just
stuff.
Just Google it.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely any film that we talk about, it's worth looking into, just seeing what resources are out there, because there's so much about the making of Star Wars and the sound of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But what I think is great about watching sort of genre films, like sci-fi films, horror films, action films, monster films, is there's always, it's so obvious none of it could exist. So it's interesting seeing how the sound is used to give credibility to what's going on. Like, you know, Star Wars, again, is a great example. It's obviously completely BS in a certain sense, but, you know, these things have a real tangible quality to it. So it's great to watch the movie, but I would, again, really recommend going and looking into what featurettes there are, making of, that kind of thing.
Would you say there's, like, a contemporary equivalent, then, of, like, Star Wars? Because if Star Wars flipped the trend from Forbidden Planet to do real life sounds. Mm-hmm. Would you say there's something contemporary that we've, you know, has changed?
Yeah, I think the big changes that we've seen, a lot of it is microphones have just gotten better, honestly. Because just to go back to Star Wars really briefly, like half the sounds in that movie are iconic. And, you know, they're super famous and they are quote unquote perfect. The other half of the sounds in Star Wars, like a lot of the Foley, the mundane sounds, like when there's a scene when Luke gets knocked out by the sand people. And, like, they drop his body by the speeder, and R2's, like, peeking out at him. The sound of Luke hitting the ground is crap. It's just like... And it feels really 70s. And it's weird seeing that Star Wars still has one foot in, you know, the sound libraries of the time. But a lot of movies now, they're just a lot of that has been not only a creative approach, but just there's better recording, you know, microphones and the technology's improved. Like if you watch war movies up until maybe even the mid-90s, they have a lot of those sort of classic tinny-sounding gunshots and ricochets. Like my favorite old-school bullet ricochet, it sounds like a laser gun. It's just this like kind of thing. And you don't hear that anymore. But like Saving Private Ryan, I feel like was the big movie that changed the way like guns sound forever. And now like every movie sounds like that.
Why do you think that is? Like what did they do differently? Was it just new libraries, new
Their goal specifically, that movie was done by a guy named Gary Rydstrom, who also did Jurassic Park, which we should talk about at some point.
Yes.
But for that movie, for the story of Saving Private Ryan, Spielberg wanted to do, you know, kind of a less glamorous war movie. And all the gun libraries, a lot of the stuff that was already available is that kind of classic John Wayne war movie stuff. So they went out and just recorded a lot of original material. And, you know, that inherently just with better microphones and whatnot sounds more real.
Yeah.
And they just tried to present that, you know, pretty accurately with some dramatic license. But
I thought really quick before we steer off of Star Wars, is a featurette that I liked that blew my mind was the one for WALL-E, which was Ben Burtt again. But that's also, you know, this mad scientist that he is taking real type his techniques and stuff to make the laser sounds and whatnot with new technology. Like now he did that in the 70s, and what you're saying. But then it's interesting to see him sort of go back to space again with WALL-E and recreate this stuff with new technology that he has available to him now. It's like, it's amazing. Wow. I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah, I was just reading up on that before this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, you know more than
like
me,
literally
then.
10 minutes ago, so it seemed like I knew what I was talking about. No, it's like actually really interesting just reading, just watching the featurette of it, is despite the new recording stuff, the like Eve's plasma cannon is just a slinky on a ladder being hit with a timpani.
Yeah,
so it's like a cousin. He was like saying it was a cousin of the blaster.
Yeah, it's the same technique, just with a different piece of metal.
Yeah, which is like super, which is really, really fascinating because, you know, it sounds maybe crisper because we have better technology or whatever it is. But the source is still very, very hands-on, which I think is interesting.
No!
And another thing he was saying too is that at, I guess when Stanton, Andrew Stanton was talking about the sounds of Wally, he was like referring to R2-D2 a ton. So Ben Burtt was like, oh, I'm never doing movies with robots ever again. I'm done with that. And then for some reason, just the process of animation actually was what got him back in, because I guess in animation, you're making sounds while animation is going on.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of back and forth, actually. Like, the sound can influence the actual shot or how something functions in the world, because you're just creating it raw. So I think, like, the process of sound design with animation is a whole other thing that I would
eventually
love to talk about.
Yeah.
Maybe not on this
podcast.
There's
no production sound. You have to... Yeah. It's everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially in WALL-E, you know, it's like the robot's whole character is sound. You know, they don't talk or anything like that. So there's no other environment to do. You're building the whole thing from scratch.
This is an oversimplification, but in a way it's like when you watch live action films, it's interesting to pay attention to the really bizarre sound design, you know, for things like creatures and whatnot. And then when you're watching animation, it's interesting to pay attention to the really mundane sounds, because in animation, everything is fabricated. So a lot of, like we were talking about, like the Miyazaki Studio Ghibli films, they have a lot of nice quiet moments. Like there's a lot of stuff in like My Neighbor Totoro, where they're in a house and it's old and it's creaky, and all of that is designed and selected. There's no locations.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like crickets, you know, in the woods or anything like that. Because the sound design in those movies always stand out to me. You know, even though it's so minimal, you would think, but it really, I think, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like the sounds are really, really create the environment even with so few elements to it.
Yeah, they're very evocative of specific locations. Like this is, I'm sorry, people, this is a random one to talk about, but there was a thing called the Animatrix. It was not necessarily a good idea, but there's one short in there. I don't remember what it's called. I don't remember who directed it or anything. So I'm just making this up, but there's a short about these kids, and it's specifically set in Japan, and they find this abandoned house and they just decide to go play in there. And there's these sort of magical supernatural things happening. And the idea is the house is glitchy in the Matrix, but like that opens with a crosswalk. And they specifically went out of their way for this, you know, cartoon to go and record a sort of outdated Japanese crosswalk signal. That's how they described it. What I find funny is, like, you do hear it in parts of Japan, like where my wife lives. Like, they still use that, which means they're kind of in the boonies. But, you know, but they picked a very evocative real world sound. And even, I think, culturally, if you don't understand it, it just has this certain old sad feel to it. And they're using a very detailed real world sound, you know.
Well, I think that,
and that grounds the whole animation in a weird
way. I think it really comes down to authenticity. I mean, reading up on Pixar and stuff like that, that they will do extensive research trips about what stuff looks like and sounds like. And then, you know, for Ratatouille they went to France and they say, well, the average audience member is not going to know what a Japanese stoplight signal sounds like, but the authenticity of it just makes the film, even subconsciously, that much better. Like, I remember one of my favorite films is Whale Rider, and that was shot in New Zealand, and I had a friend who lived in New Zealand for 2 years, and he was just like, even the sounds, the way the doors creak sounded so familiar and evocative to him, and only he noticed it, but, like, that authenticity was there. So I feel like that level of care put into sound design just makes your world that much more real. It's really interesting.
I feel like that's a through line in a lot of films that I found the sound to be really interesting. You know, before I ended up doing sound in film specifically, it's fun stories, pretty pictures, and cool stuff to listen to, you know? But a lot of them are films that work in what you call authenticity, even in situations where there is no way to have that. Because we've mentioned Jurassic Park a couple of times. We might as well talk about that.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park, I'm sure, is not the first film to do this, you know, but it's a film with a lot of quote-unquote monsters. And they're all very grounded, simple, relatively untreated animals from the real world. Because I feel like, you know, older dinosaur movies, you'd have like a couple lion roars and stuff, and they're all sort of tinny and processed and Godzilla-esque. And then when you get to Jurassic Park, it's very simple. It's usually only maybe two or three animals at a time, or just one animal at a time. Mm-hmm. But it's just that authenticity of it being, you know, a real, real field recordings of animals.
Do you know what the T-Rex was made up?
It's a mix of things. There's some deeper animals in there, and internet, I may be wrong on this, but it's probably like an alligator. There might be some large cats in there, but what really makes it distinctive is it's a baby elephant.
Yeah.
That's been pitch shifted. But that movie, I think why that works so well is it kind of goes against the conventional logic that deep voices are scary. You know, if you watch like older movies, a lot of monsters are just rawr, rawr, the whole time. And then in Jurassic Park, everything's scary is kind of high pitched. Like the T-Rex has a weirdly kind of high pitched.
Yeah, the Velociraptors.
Roar. Yeah, and the Velociraptors are dolphins, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't one of the noises like a debarked dog?
Yeah, whenever a T-Rex or a raptor in any Jurassic Park movie grabs something and does like the chew toy shake, that's actually a dog with a chew toy.
Wow.
Like, there's nothing else in it. It's just a dog.
That's amazing.
Well, so like I did not have a dog growing up. So whenever I see like Cherish, like your dog, and you give it a toy and it's just, I'm like, holy shit, that's a raptor. Like I have the reverse association.
Yeah, that was pretty...
He's I didn't have pretty, a dog growing up either.
He's pretty noisy.
So what are some, like, your top 3 to 5 films that you would recommend for people listening that they should check out and really listen to?
Yeah, I mean, I think these are films people might have seen already. But yeah, like, Star Wars, definitely worth a look. The original trilogy. Jurassic Park, definitely worth a look.
Yep.
And then when you're getting into more modern stuff, it's like The Matrix is definitely worth a look. The Matrix is kind of at this transition from analog to digital. Like a lot of film editing in general was kind of like Saving Private Ryan was 97. That was cut, like literally cut. That film was not digitally edited. Mm-hmm. That was the last film that was physically cut to win an Oscar for editing, I think.
Oh, wow.
But like The Matrix, they were in a Pro Tools workflow pretty much, which is the software that I use today, a very different, newer version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, when you get to digital technology, digital editing software for picture or sound, it becomes a lot easier to do a lot of edits. And you have the challenge you used to have before with analog editing, I feel like, was, you know, every change was kind of a laborious effort, like any edit of any kind.
Yeah.
But now when you get to digital, you can just cut and delete and cut and cut and cut. And you start struggling against overcutting, having too many sounds, too many elements. And it's interesting, when you get to modern movies, you can do so much more in terms of density. I think the thing that you start to notice in modern films is the way they try to keep stuff, I guess you'd say, legible.
Yeah.
Because you can put sounds everywhere. And, of course, when visual effects are getting more and more dense, too, you have to try to have the sound keep up with that. Like, I think it's interesting seeing... in like the Star Wars prequels, how dense those battles get visually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, how many friggin' laser sounds they have to cut to have that make sense. You know, and you're reaching this sort of point of saturation.
Mm-hmm.
Should I talk about the extreme of that? Like I was going to talk about The Matrix and how it's a fun movie, but.
No, this is really interesting.
I want to do my 3.
Yeah.
I know kung fu.
No kung fu.
What are your 3, Joey?
Well, I don't know if I have 3. I just like all the... Well, I think it was interesting because you talk a lot about technically, you know, how sound design is more relevant watching newer films, but you did mention that creatively, older classics do very interesting things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
With the...
Good work is good work.
Good work is good work. So I everything that I think of in terms of sound design comes from like... what set a standard, you know what I mean? So it's like, whoa, they did that really cool sequence in like the birds, you know, and stuff when she's basically films have really interesting sequences. I don't know as a whole if they hold up, but that scene when in the birds, when she's in the house and you can hear the like thousands of birds swarming around the house. Mm-hmm. Very interesting sound design scene.
Mitch.
So the ending in The Third Man. You remember mm-hmm. when he's running through the tunnels? And you just cut to.
I've never seen this movie.
Oh my God, The Third Man is so good. That
I haven't either, Kevin.
So yeah, you could just watch these scenes and then just put on some headphones and then you're in the tunnels and you don't know where he's surrounded and you hear these echoes from all different sides and he's like mm-hmm. trying to get out of here and mm-hmm. it's really effective. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow.
You just mentioned probably Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, that was, by the way, I think the first movie not in mono, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were like, hey, we can have more than one speaker or more than one channel.
Yeah.
And that, you can hear helicopters go right to left and things like that. And very interesting for the time, obviously.
Do you prefer heavier or light board?
Heavier.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought all the young guys like lighter boards.
Can't write the nose on those things.
Big Duke 6, this is Eagle Thrust 7. We've got it spotted.
Big Duke 6 to Eagle Thrust. Put on heading 270. Assume attack formation.
I remember hearing that Woody Allen movies are still only in mono. Really? Like he doesn't like anything different.
Well, I live in a cave and I have like DVDs of four movies I liked and that's all I ever see. So,
wouldn't know. That works out. Then.
Wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Weird. So those are my basically ones that stand out in my head is like,
yeah, I think it's just interesting watching old movies. Like I mentioned, like genre films are great for both visuals and sound to watch. But like, I love the original Alien, and there's some great sound work in that. And then there's some sound work in that that's, you know, super dated. Like the Alien itself has a great voice. I think my guess is it's some kind of bird, and there might be a pig in there because it's all these great squeals.
Yeah.
But at the very end, spoiler, when Sigourney Weaver and the Alien are like in the escape pod together.
Yeah.
The alien like pops its hand out and it's this great jump scare. And it is like the goofiest Jackie Chan whoosh. It's just whoosh. It's like, because it's an 80s movie.
I think like what's interesting is like piggybacking off of that, I feel like asking people to watch movies to pay attention to sound design is something like not a lot of people have really done. You know, like if you think about cinematography, you know, you can turn the sound off and I think Deakins just had a quote about like why he doesn't like the perfect shot or something like that, because that's distracting. When you do that, you take people out of the story, which is not the goal of great cinematography. Which I think is really interesting from like one of our greatest cinematographers. Mm-hmm. But it's very easy to visually look at something and be like, oh, that is a noticeable shot or that's a beautiful shot or anything like that. But with sound, it is even more invisible, I think. Mm-hmm. Even if it's great sound work, you know, it falls in line with the transporting you into the story more easily than cinematography does. I just hit the microphone.
Yeah. It's similar to the argument, I think, in our CG video, where you only notice, like, in a certain point, bad sound.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of movies that have substantial amount of creative design work done. But if it's done well, it just becomes part of your emotional experience with the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything we talked about, like, you know, Star Wars, everyone knows those sounds.
That's
but, you know, it's easy to take for granted that that's just what a lightsaber sounds like. You know, no, that was obviously...
That's Ben Burtt
beat his head against the wall for a year before he came up with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's what's like so fascinating about watching the featurettes and the behind the scenes on sound specifically, because so much work goes into those and you really, really never think about it. You're just like, yeah, like that's the lightsaber or that's Wally's voice.
Yeah.
And it's like, Wally doesn't talk. It's not real.
I was talking to my cousin who's, you know, small. She's 14, so I guess she's about this tall. But yeah, I was like, she's... has this thing where she doesn't want to watch Star Wars. She's like, oh, that's for nerds. And I started describing like the stuff that goes into how they make these sounds and with like the slinkies and the wires and stuff. Like, and then her nerd light went on and she's like, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, but she still hasn't seen the movies, but I'm starting to get her to be like, just give it a shot, because everything that goes into these films is like pure cinema. You know what I mean? Like it is at its purest form, like really creatively just executed art, you know, from all aspects, especially sound, I think.
Yeah.
Also, very innovative.
Great music, too.
Yeah.
Great music.
Nah, Star Wars kind of forgettable.
Yeah. And so,
not iconic at all.
It's funny how, like, you start breaking these things down and all these things that you don't think about. She doesn't think about the sound design in Star Wars, but I'm like, you need to. Like, it's so cool. And then
because people make mouth noise impressions of like everything in Star Wars. You know, and those were all decisions.
Right.
It's not like you build a, you know, Millennium Falcon model and then it just makes sounds. It just,
yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking about, I was like, oh, I remember there was an iconic sound in a movie really recently. I was trying to think about it the whole time, and it was the Godzilla roar, which is legitimately great.
The
I don't know
the new version?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all right. Yeah.
I'm down with that. Okay. Okay.
It's good. It's very similar to the original. It's respectful, you know, but it doesn't sound like an effect from the 50s.
No, that's certainly true.
What was the original? The original is so good.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of variations on it. And again, internet, I might be slightly off, but I think it's basically rubbing like a rubber ball on a gong, and it gives you this this weird, rich sound. It's not made the same way, but out of the Star Wars prequels, my favorite new effect was the seismic charges in Attack of the Clones. It's in the asteroid scene, and Jango Fett's dropping these like space depth charges. That makes no sense. But they have this really great metallic twang to it, and the internet believes it's made with this large like 18-foot instrument called like the beam or the blaster beam or whatever, and so the Star Trek soundtrack used that as well. Oh. Mm. But it's just this musical sound that's sort of performed atypically, and then that has so much color and character to it, you can use it as a voice or as a laser weapon.
I have a question for you, Kevin. Do you watch, the first time you watch movies, are you able to separate trying to figure out the sound process from actually watching the movie?
I feel like it's like anyone else, and like watching CG, you know, like sometimes you'll notice it. Your eye will catch or your ear will notice something. Mm-hmm. Like I will notice if there's a library effect that I have also. And it's like, oh.
That's gotta be funny.
Like I watched one movie recently, I won't say what it was, but they used the same door opening sound 18 times in the movie. Harbinger Down, which I backed on Kickstarter, actually.
What's the famous scream? The Wilhelm?
The Wilhelm scream?
Yeah.
I'm so over the Wilhelm.
Yeah.
Ben Burtt used it well. It's originally from a 50s... I don't think it was recorded for it, but it was named after a 50s Western movie where a character named Wilhelm gets shot in the leg with an arrow. I don't think it was the first one to use it. But Ben Burtt did great with Star Wars and the Indiana Jones trilogy, where he put that scream in each movie. It's like a joke, and it's a great scream. But then everyone ripped him off.
Yeah.
And my goal in life is to use the internet sheep scream. Yeah. Or made a goat. I'm really bad at identifying animals. Well, but I put that in all of our videos.
Yeah.
And other things that I work on.
I remember
noticing the Wilhelm scream when I was really young, and I was like, this is the same thing. This is the same guy. Yeah. How, like, what is happening? And my parents were like, no, like, Lauren, they make each movie different. Like, that's not possible. And I was
Shut up, Lauren.
No, like, am I crazy? And once I found out it was a thing, I was like, yes, I was right. I did it. Yeah. Like, I noticed. Yeah.
So, I love that. It's like a little inside joke for
the sound world.
Right before we time out, can I just throw in like a random other thought?
Yes.
Just other movies to really watch are just like action movies, like anything with a martial arts fight scene, like martial arts movies, anything with a lot of gunfights. That's really worth watching, because in any movie where you have a lot of like punches or gunshots or like basically the same sound happening over and over, that's really worth watching and studying and seeing how they try to get away with that. Because when it boils down to it, when you cut a martial arts fight, you're using like 10 sounds over and over and over, and it gets this weird musical quality to it. So it's definitely worth watching those movies and just paying attention to like how many whooshes they use and especially how those guide your eye. Because action movies are very busy.
Yeah.
So having these ridiculous sound effects can kind of help you make sense of it. Like the Bourne movies, like, you know, Bourne Identity, Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum, so on and so forth. Those movies feel pretty realistic on the whole, but if you watch those movies, the martial arts fight sounds are ridiculous. Like, they're completely bonkers.
Yeah. In a good way or a bad way?
Did you ever notice?
Well, I mean, yes, but I want to hear your take.
No, I think I think it's great, because in Bourne Supremacy, that's when they introduced the handheld shaky cam.
Right. Yeah.
And it was not so refined in that movie. And in that movie, the crazy, like, whoosh, whoosh, kind of stuff, like, in the fight scenes, it helps you make sense of it. And And those are all really deliberate choices. But anything where there's a lot of dense sounds like that, really repetitive stuff, that's also definitely worth watching and just kind of paying attention to, like, yeah, how much of my understanding of this fight scene is coming from these ridiculous kapow and, like, whooshes and stuff.
Yeah, that's really fascinating that it can direct attention.
Yeah,
and that kind of stuff. That's really
the
cool.
extreme end of it, and I'll make this quick, but I did not see the whole movie. I watched parts of it on the internet. The last Transformers movie, Transformers 4, what was it called?
Is that the one with Mark Wahlberg?
The Bees?
Extinction. Transformers 4, Extinction. Are you sure?
Age of Extinction.
There we go. Age of Ultron. Transformers Age of Ultron was that movie had some extremely dense battle scenes in Hong Kong in terms of just the number of Transformers. And conventionally you would think like, oh, we got to hear all this stuff, but it's just stuff happening everywhere. And I was blown away just watching bits of that movie and seeing how like art house the sound design was. Like, it's so minimal. Because there's so much going on in that movie, and that's a whole separate debate. You know, is there too much happening in the VFX? That's a separate debate. But to make it watchable for the audience, you really only hear one sound at a time during these epic battle scenes.
Optimus, Autobots, you alive? Come on, bitch!
Come on!
Evac! Evac! We're getting flagged! We got company below! Oh, badasses! Duck, speed! Take your shot!
So, you know, even though there's like explosions going on constantly, there's gunfire, there's robots transforming, you just hear tung, 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 ching, tung, tung, like it's super minimal.
That's really fascinating.
That's definitely a film worth studying just for how useful the sound is in guiding your eye and making the visuals legible.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's ultra stripped back. It feels kind of like a silent movie in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
really cool.
I feel like that might be the new trend, you know, in these big visual effects pictures where you use the sound in a really, really abstract way to guide your eye through the frame.
Interesting.
It's weird that we're at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're about out of time, but
thanks
for talking with us. If you guys have any questions about what we talked about or the movies we talked about or want some more recommendations, you can join us in the forums. We'll have an official forum discussion for this podcast. So leave us some comments and tell us your favorite sound design movies, and we'll catch you later.
Bye.